As are your prayers this morning. I'm so thankful that we have a God like that. Different ones mentioned in that song that was just sung there. God saw where the need was, and God was able to meet their needs, each and every one. David, Daniel, Paul and Silas, and many, many more could be put in that song as well. But I'm so thankful that God is, He's a God of gods and a Lord of kings. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. I'm going to write that title on the board here. And considering the title of this, it actually comes from a scripture that we'll read later. But it's in the story of Daniel. And it's not Daniel in the lion's den. It's actually the first part of Daniel. When Daniel and the three Hebrew children, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it was when they were first called upon to for service in the Babylonian Empire there under King Nebuchadnezzar. And there was, that's what they would do back in those days. The kings that would conquer a land or a territory or another nation, they would seek for the elite amongst the people that were captives. And they would use those as servants, special positions, offices or whatever, just to make use of their spoil, basically, in the people. And so it was with the children of Israel. They were taken captive here. And so Daniel and, as is mentioned here, they're also known as these other names, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. You remember basically the little competition they had early on with the others. They were given the king's meat set before them that they were supposed to eat. Well, they refused it. And they said, no, you got to eat this. No, we're not going to eat that. And it's covered here in the first chapter of Daniel. But remember what they did. They chose rather, let's see if we can find the scriptures here. And they drank, they took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Totally opposite of meat. Especially the king's meat. But yet, the amazing thing was, at the end of all of this, notice what it says here. Verse 17, chapter 1. And as for these four children, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, and the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. Now I want to take note here. It says, and the king communed with them. You know what that tells me? The king was very interested in seeing firsthand how this little competition turned out. He didn't send some other advisors and council, whoever, to go explore and test and see how they... No, he wanted to find out for himself. And he was very impressed. And it said, in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times, not just twice as good, no, 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in, they were in all his realm. That, dear ones, is impressive. That's amazing. And who else could do that but the God of gods and the Lord of kings? He was the difference maker. All right. He's the one that made the difference. And it's because they wanted to follow the Lord. They didn't want something, we could put it this way. They didn't want themselves or any other person to take the glory. They wanted God to receive the glory. If God was going to do anything, He's going to get the glory. And sure enough, God did an amazing thing and God got the glory. You know, that's how God works. The scripture says He's a jealous God. He will not give His glory to another. This is how God works. But notice how they took, if we could say it this way, these four children, we'll just call them children, they're young men at this time. They took the lowly route. They put their lives on the line, being willing to be made fun of if this doesn't turn out. But you know, that same type of faith that they had, it carried them through other times, other tests that they all experienced. Remember when they were all made to bow down before the golden image? And who didn't bow down? Three Hebrew children. No, we're not going to bow. And if not, if God doesn't deliver us, we're still not going to bow. That's faith, dear ones. And this was one of the first tests of faith they had here, and they passed it. God had His eyes on them, and God had something special for them to do. And truly, it was their time to be faithful to the Lord. It was God's time to show, if we could say it this way, the heathens, that there is a God of gods and a Lord of kings. All right? And this is one of the first examples He used with King Nebuchadnezzar. But God wasn't through. God wanted to show King Nebuchadnezzar something else. And this is where we get into the second chapter. I would like to read all the verses, but we won't for the sake of time. We'll try to skip through here. I'll try to paraphrase just a little bit. So, the beginning of the second chapter, we'll cover some of what happened here. Basically, King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And he woke up the next morning and he couldn't remember the dream. Have any of y'all ever had that happen? I have. You remember the feeling and the emotion you had from that dream. And maybe it was a good thing or maybe it was a bad thing, but you remember how you felt. And you woke up from that dream, you're like, and then you want to tell somebody, I can't remember what it was, but I know how it made me feel, you know. And so here it is. King Nebuchadnezzar had this dream and he can't remember it. And it was troubling to him. He knew there was something there, something significant, and he couldn't even remember what the dream was. So he makes this declaration. He's like, all right, all you wise men and astrologers, I've hired you for a reason. Because you're amazing. You're the elite. I pay you well. He's like, now, here's your job. I want you to tell me what my dream was. And they're like, whoa, that's not fair. I mean, can you imagine someone doing that to you? If they woke up one morning and had a dream and they were troubled about it and they called you up or they sent you a text, like, hey, I just had a dream. Can you tell me what it was? What? That's not fair. That's just not fair. That's unjust. That's requiring something above and beyond what anyone in the flesh could ever think of doing. That's just not right. But here it is, the king. And he has the power and authority to make this declaration. And when he made this declaration, these fellows started trembling. Because he said, if you don't tell me, not only that, he wanted to tell him what the dream was and tell him the meaning of the dream. So it's a two-edged, I mean, it's like two astronomical things here he's requiring. Not just a suggestion. He's like, no, it's got to be done. He's like, if you don't, notice what he said here. He says, and the king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. And if you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Wow. That, again, just taking this story from the surface, for what it's worth, and just word for word, that is totally not fair. I don't care how smart you think you are. That is not fair. But that was the king's declaration. That was his command. And the interesting thing is, the three Hebrew children and Daniel, they were in that number. They were some of the wise men that the king had chosen. Now, maybe they hadn't been with him that long, and maybe he was looking to some of the others, the elders, perhaps, leaning more on them. But the point was, this could be them too. And so later it goes on, and again, he emphasizes again, if you don't tell me the dream, this is what's going to happen. And the Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth, this is verse 10, that can shew the king's matter. Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such thing of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. They're like, this has never happened before. This is unprecedented. And they're not they don't want to charge the king foolishly here and say, you're not being fair, king. You know, they don't want to say it too blunt, but that's what they're insinuating here. And it said, it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can shew it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. That's interesting. For this cause, the king was angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. He's like, you're not going to tell me? All right, I'm going to do away with every single one of you. And you think about that. That just doesn't add up. But there was something here. And let's think about this, dear ones. I believe God gave King Nebuchadnezzar that dream to begin with. Don't you? Yes, and we'll find out why here in a bit. Because this dream is eventually revealed. But God gave King Nebuchadnezzar that dream. And God also took that dream from his memory. You think, why would God do that? God had a greater plan, you see. God wanted to work in a very unconventional way. And it seemed very extreme what King Nebuchadnezzar was doing here. But God was wanting to use this to teach everyone a lesson up to who the God of gods and the Lord of kings was. All right. So there was a method to what God was doing here. Though no one else really understood except Daniel, as we'll see. And it says, the decree went forth, verse 13, that the wise men should be slain. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. They're like, all right, you guys, all right, we're going to start the roundup here. And Daniel and his fellows, they're part of them. They're going to be slain. Then Daniel answered the counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which has gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? That's a valid question. That's a fair question. And he said, then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would shew the king the interpretation. You know, first of all, that's an amazing step of faith in itself. It hadn't been revealed to him yet. Daniel didn't know what it was yet. But he told the captain, he's like, go tell the king, I'll tell him what it is. But you know what Daniel's thinking this whole time? He's like, I can't, but I know one who can. Okay? He didn't tell him what his secret was yet. But he did have a secret. All right? And here's one of the secrets. I find this amazing. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He went to his house and made it known to them, his friends, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. You know, this is amazing. Daniel's realizing, you know what? This is too big for me. I need help even petitioning God in behalf of this need. This is our lives are on the line. And I need some help, friends. And he petitioned them, will you pray with me? His three friends, will you pray with me about this matter? Because I need some help. We need some help here. We're desperate for God to come on the scene. Have you ever been in that place before? It's one thing, yes, it's wonderful that we have direct access to the throne of grace. ourselves individually. Jesus made the way for that. But it's also an awesome privilege that we can go to one another and we can share in each other's burdens and concerns, especially when it gets something to this caliber. Their lives are on the line. They needed some support. They needed each other. So Daniel went back and said, "Hey, you guys pray with me about this?" And obviously they did. Because verse 19, "Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven." God revealed it to him. God was faithful, you see. "And Daniel answered and said, Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His." And notice what else he says. "And He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with Him. I thank Thee and praise Thee, O God of my fathers, who Thou hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of Thee, for Thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter." You know what Daniel was doing here? He was being faithful to give God 100% of the glory for this. It wasn't because of who he was, that he was such a smart and intellectual person and could speak well and eloquently and all those things. No. It wasn't because he was a good-looking fellow. It wasn't because he was a very athletic and strong. No. None of that. It was because of the God of gods and the Lord of kings. And we'll read here after a bit who said that. But it's amazing that Daniel, that God was able to impart this vision to him. And Daniel, he was therefore able to go back to the king with boldness, no doubts about what it was. Can you imagine that? Just think here for a moment. Put yourself in Daniel's shoes. And if you were even told what someone else was thinking or what their dream was or whatever, and all the details, and then for you to go back to them, especially to someone with the extreme authority as King Nebuchadnezzar, and to go back with the boldness and have all the explicit details of everything that was in his dream, plus the interpretation of it, that was boldness. But it was through God. It was godly boldness, if we can say that. It was the confidence that he had in the Lord. Because God had already proven himself faithful prior to this. And this was yet another stepping stone. This was yet another exercise of Daniel's faith. Because you know what? There was going to be some even greater tests ahead for Daniel. This was just some of the first he was having to deal with. But God had a job for Daniel to do, even later down the road. But notice what Daniel said. He's speaking of God, and he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. You know what's interesting is Daniel served through, was it five or six kings? Was it six? I've lost count of, I mean, it was several kings that Daniel served them, heathen kings. And in all these, he had a high position of authority and wisdom. But this is where it started out. God wanted to use him in several capacities. And it's as if Daniel already has, maybe he didn't understand fully what God was going to do with him, but he knew that he removeth kings and setteth up kings. I don't think he really knew the full extent of what God was going to do with him, but he knew at the beginning that God's the one in control. God's the one that put Nebuchadnezzar in power. God is the one that gave him the dream. God's the one that gave me the dream and the interpretation of it. And so now he's expecting God to come through on his end. Well, let's see what happened here. So Daniel went to the king, and he tells him the dream. And I want to read a few verses here. We'll start with verse 31 so we can get an idea of what this vision was, this dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had. Verse 31, "Thou, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, and his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, and his feet of part iron and part clay. And thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet, that it were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron and the clay and the brass and the silver and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is amazing. And I don't believe King Nebuchadnezzar really knew, obviously, what all this meant until Daniel explained it to him. And he goes on through the rest of this chapter and explains it to him. But I find this amazing that, first of all, he gave detail about this dream. It wasn't just, there was just kind of a big image, and then something happened, and then it was knocked to pieces. And that was your dream. Oh, no. God gave him detail. And there was meaning to the detail, you see. And you think about this, folks. Let's just step back for a moment here. This was a heathen king, Nebuchadnezzar, that Daniel was dealing with. Do you know God has done and can do the same thing for other kings, tyrants, dictators, presidents, you name it? God has done the same type of thing many times throughout history. And he still can do this. It may not happen exactly like this. But God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings. That means he is over everyone. It doesn't matter how big a king you think you are, that you rule millions of people. That doesn't matter. Daniel hit the nail on the head. He said, "You are the one that setteth up kings and removeth kings." That's the God we're dealing with. Okay? Daniel knew that. And by the time Daniel got through telling this dream to King Nebuchadnezzar, it doesn't go into detail how the king reacted, but I can only imagine King Nebuchadnezzar going, "That's it. How did you know?" Daniel tells him, we'll cover that here in a little bit. But he goes on and explains what this dream meant. And I think this is a very important part. We'll try to cover some of the main points here. But first of all, he covered about the image head with gold, and the breast of arms silver, and the belly and thighs of brass, and the legs of iron and feet of part iron and part clay. And then it talked about the stone that was cut out without hands. So we cover the first four parts of this image. The first being the Chaldean Empire, Babylonian Empire, same thing. And that was of gold. And then the other part was the Medo-Persian Empire. That was the next empire that was to come into play. And this is, he explains later in the rest of this chapter, where I'm just paraphrasing some of this. And then the next part, the belly and thighs of brass, was the Grecian Empire. And then it covered the last part, the legs of iron, his feet of part iron and part clay, was the Roman Empire. And all four of these empires were to cover roughly 550 to 600 years, as this was written about that many years prior to Christ's coming. And so this image, this dream that King Nebuchadnezzar saw, the image he saw in the dream, was exactly how Daniel explained it. But there was a meaning to this image. It wasn't just something for the fun of it. Oh, that's a neat looking image. That's a neat little story. No, he was prophesying through Daniel's interpretation, through the vision, the dream that God gave Nebuchadnezzar, and therefore gave Daniel the interpretation of it. It was prophesying what was to come to pass. And he's saying, first will be your empire, but your empire ultimately is going to come to an end. And another empire is going to take over. And ultimately is going to come down to the Roman Empire. But at the last, this Roman Empire, this part iron it says here, a strong empire. But here was going to come in verse 35. It says, verse 34. And thou sawest till a stone was cut out without hands. What is this? A stone cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay and break them to pieces. And then he goes on. I'm going to read part of his interpretation here in verse 44. It says, and in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. Now, what's he saying there? In other words, this kingdom is not going to be like any of these other kingdoms, whether it's the Romans, the Grecians, the Medo-Persians, the Chaldeans, and any before that or after that. This kingdom, it says, shall not be left to other people. Do you know what that means? It means no one else is going to come in after this and conquer it. That is saying something. That's pretty bold of Daniel, was it not? But he was speaking truth because God was the one that revealed that to him. God was the one that gave him that. It wasn't something Daniel came up with and with his buddies there like, yeah, let's come up with this and this. No, God was the one that revealed this to Daniel. And this was a true prophecy. He's saying the kingdom shall not be left to other people. In other words, it's not going to be another king come in and conquer this kingdom to where it's no more. Oh, no. It said, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. And notice what it says here, verse 44. And it shall stand forever. Thank the Lord. This is prophesying of Jesus' kingdom, the kingdom of God that Jesus is going to establish in the earth through the hearts and lives of men and women. And it's one that was, it was a stone that was cut out without hands. In other words, God was going to do this. It was nothing of man's working, just like, you remember the temple? When Solomon had it built, it was the same type of symbolism here. At that temple, yes, it was made with hands, but it was made at a distance. It was made off-site. And it was chiseled and worked out. But when they brought these large stones into place to build this beautiful temple, which was going to be the presence of the Lord, when they brought those stones there and they put them into place, there was not the sound of a hammer or a chisel. Because God put those into place, you see? They were made perfectly off-site, and you can, many different interpretations here, but this being said, that God was going to work on, if we can use a spiritual analogy, that God wants to work on us and get us shaped and molded how He wants us to be. And when He brings us together collectively, that we come together beautifully and we fit in one accord in the same spirit. And there's no more hammering and chiseling on each other. No, we fit and it's a quiet, peaceable habitation for the Spirit of God to come down and dwell within us, individually and collectively. And the presence of the Lord to come down and to bless. And it's obvious to all that God is there in the midst. And you know, that's what He did with this stone that was cut out without hands. And it came down the mountain and it smote this image. And it just busted all to pieces. Consumed it. And it said, it shall break into pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. I'm so thankful that this prophecy is 100% true and accurate. Because it has happened, and it is happening. Do you realize that all these kingdoms we just covered, and many more, have come and gone? They rise, and they fall. Be conquered by all kinds of other nations, other kingdoms, other kings, whatever. But the kingdom that Jesus set up on the earth, in our hearts, in our lives, has not been conquered yet. And you know what? It won't be conquered. Unless we give up ourselves. Unless we're the ones to forfeit it and to give it up. You see what I'm saying? But no, this kingdom has stood forever. And I want to read some more scriptures here while we're on this thought. Later on in Daniel, chapter 7, There's another vision that God gave Daniel. We're just going to turn and read these real quick. In Daniel 7, verses 13 and 14, it says, "And I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed." That's the kingdom. That's God's church that he established with Jesus Christ, his disciples and apostles in the early church. He established it. And it went to the four corners of the earth. Went all over the globe. And has done nothing but grow ever since the beginning. And it continues to grow, even today. There was someone mentioned the other day that some of the persecuted nations overseas, that there are millions of Christians. And some in Hindu nations and Muslim nations and other nations, you would think they would be overtaken by the fear and intimidation. But no, actually, the Christian population is growing. Even though they may be displaced and pushed out of their homes and out of their cities and all kinds of discomfort and all kinds of persecution, some thrown in prison, some killed. But yet, the Christian population worldwide continues to grow. Now tell me, how is that possible? It's because of this God of gods and the Lord of kings. He spoke it, and it is so. In other words, his power is above any decree, any law that any king or dictator or tyrant could pass. The law of God penetrates much deeper than all the surface laws that any king could put into place. Because it goes into the hearts and lives of men and women. That their love and their passion for God, they want to please the Lord no matter what. They want to make heaven their home no matter what. There's loved ones that have gone on before them. They want to see them again. So guess what? I'm going to serve the Lord. Just like Daniel 3. It's like, it doesn't matter what happens to me down here. I'm going to serve the Lord. Remember what Joshua said? "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You have to make up your mind. And once your mind is made up, you got to keep it. Yes, it can be. You can forfeit it. You can give it up. But oh, dear ones, Daniel had a vision of something. And I'm so thankful that he was able to get a hold of God that night with his three friends. That vision was imparted to him. He told it to the king. Now, here's what I want to get. Notice what the king said. Verse 43 or 46. "Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshiped Daniel." Now, that's an interesting twist. Here's the king. And he's the one falling on his face. Now, I don't think Daniel was comfortable with that. I don't think he allowed him to stay down there and he's like, no. There's someone else that needs to be worshipped here. And notice what he says. "And he commanded that all should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, Of a truth, it is that your God is a God of gods and Lord of kings, and the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldst reveal this secret." In other words, the king knew that this was virtually an impossibility were it not for someone like this. And I don't think he really understood it to the fullest. After he made that decree and all the other wise men are saying, This has never been done before. This is unprecedented. Why are you requiring? But the king was so adamant. He's like, I don't care. I want to know. I got to know. And then it was revealed. And then King Nebuchadnezzar is saying, you know what? There's only one person that can do this. And Daniel, it's your God. The God of gods and the Lord of kings. He's the one that did this. And you know, I believe that touched King Nebuchadnezzar to the core. I know it did. And I don't think he ever forgot that instance. You know, God can do the same with hearts and lives of men and women today. Those that seem so hardened by sin and wickedness, and they seem so far from God. Yet God in His Spirit, dear ones, can still come down and in a dream or a vision and talk to their hearts at night when no one else is around. It doesn't matter how much money they have, how much authority they have, how much power they have, their experience or their everything. It doesn't matter any of that. God sees their soul and He loves their soul and He wants to see them saved and He will visit them. Exactly what He did to King Nebuchadnezzar. He visited King Nebuchadnezzar and gave him an opportunity to see what God can do. And he experienced it to the fullest. And not just the king. Can you imagine? All the other wise men and astrologers and they're all going, wow. How did you do that, Daniel? Oh yes, Daniel was faithful. Like, it was God. It wasn't me. Don't bow down to me. This was God that did this. You know, after this, it says the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Wow. Who could do all this but the God of gods and Lord of kings? You know, I take comfort in this story. We consider our world and our nation today. It can get rather depressing if you focus just on the surface things that are happening right now. The sin and wickedness that is abounding every day. It's like every time you turn on the radio or you read the newspaper, you see the notifications of here's another shooting. Here's another massacre. Here's another, all these other heinous crimes that have been committed against humanity and children and homes being destroyed. And the list goes on and on and on. Even in our schools, in our college, things are just like, this would have never happened 50 years ago. And now everything just seems like it's falling apart. But I want us to remember, that's what Daniel is talking about here. The kings would rise and fall. In other words, nations will rise and fall. Even our nation, which I love and appreciate, the freedoms we have today. I'm thankful that I live in America. I'm thankful for these opportunities. But you know what? I can't hang my whole life and my soul upon the leaders of my land. I can't do that. I have to go back to who's over everyone now. And that is the God of gods and the Lord of kings. Because I know what God can do. He can supersede any declaration or law that has ever been made or ever will be made. God can still penetrate through all those things and still bring glory to His name. He can still perform miracles. He can still save souls. He can still heal bodies. He can still deliver people out of prisons. Literally. God can do that. Remember the song the sister was singing? Paul and Silas were in jail. They were in jail. Who delivered them? God of gods and the Lord of kings. You realize there may come a day, and I hate to see this, there may come a day in our nation that some of us may be put into prison. I don't know. Only God knows. But there may come a day that that may happen. But you know what? We have to go back to the God of gods and the Lord of kings. You know what Daniel and the three Hebrew children, they survived. And they didn't survive just being a beaten slave and a servant somewhere. And no. God promoted them to a high position. To prove, you know what, I can do this. And I can bless them with wisdom 10 times what anyone else has. Who else could do that? But the God of gods and the Lord of kings. Now that's amazing. And that is comforting to me. To know that yes, this world may fall apart around us. But let's not get our sights settled here below, dear ones. As we all know, we're just passing through. We're just pilgrims and strangers here on this earth. Let's look to the one that's leading us on to glory, to a future heavenly abode where it's eternally, we can be free from the person, we could say, Satan coming along and requiring and demanding something that is unjust and unfair, just like King Nebuchadnezzar was. That's how the devil can come along and try us and tempt us and persecute us and demanding things. But God's saying, I still got a way for you, child. I can go above and beyond even what the devil's trying to do. In your personal life, or in the lives of God's people collectively, or in our nation, or on the world, all these other nations, it's like, oh Lord, it's not fair. I mean, all these people being mistreated like this, and God's saying, I'm still God of gods and Lord of kings. I still rule above all that, and I still have people that have found themselves, yes, in maybe a difficult place, difficult position, but He's like, I've met them there. I've met them there at night when no one else is around, and my spirit visited them, and they responded to my spirit. And they are my child, and I'm going to care for them. Even if they perish at the hands of their persecutors, I'm going to bring them back to glory. I'm going to bring them back home with me where they'll never have to deal with that again. Who else can do that? Who else? What other religion can offer such hope and such peace? There's not another religion out there except the one of the God of gods and the Lord of kings that can offer this boldness and this confidence and this faith in what God can do for all of us. Who can do that but the God of gods and the Lord of kings? And I want to read another scripture. This is in Luke. You remember when Jesus came? So we're fast forwarding from the time of Daniel, several hundred years, 500-600 years here. So in Luke, all these other kingdoms have come and gone, like that image was portrayed. And in Luke, the first chapter. And this is, we're nearing the time and we celebrate the birth of Christ. And you know, that in itself, I don't intend to cover all that, but that was just a miracle in itself. I've covered this before, but to think of the exact time and location and the circumstances, the environment, everything about it, God orchestrated the birth of Jesus to be exactly where it was during the Roman Empire. And it seemed the children of Israel, the Jews, were at their smallest and weakest point in many ways. And God's saying, I can do something greater than this. And no, it's not that I'm going to set up another king and take place of the Roman Empire, the emperor. That wasn't his plan. He's like, no, I'm going to establish something that's more powerful and greater than any of that could ever do. And here in Luke, the first chapter, in verse 31, I'll see, read verse 30. And the angel said unto her, fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with God. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shalt call his name Jesus. And he shall be great, and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David, and he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever. And notice this last part. It's almost echoing exactly what Daniel said 500-600 years prior to this. He said, and of his kingdom shall there be no end. It's not left to another person, not left to other people. No, God's going to establish this, and God's going to monitor it, and God's going to see it all the way through and protect his children, his holy bride, his church. He's going to keep his hand over them all through the ages. It doesn't matter who's going to be in power on the earth, but no, his kingdom, there shall be no end. And as the scripture says, and I'm not going to read all these scriptures, but it talks about the kingdom. It talks about it being within. That it's something, God is reigning within our hearts over sin, over Satan, over all those things. That's where it's reigning, is right here. And as one of our songs says, it shall ever increase, you see. That as Satan brings more and more attacks and more temptations and more, you name it, trials and all those things, that God's going to say, I got the grace for you. I can give you, I can help you and give you the victory here and I can give you victory over there. Because he's saying, I am the God of gods and the Lord of kings, and I can give that power and authority to you. And it's ever going to increase in our hearts each and every day, each and every year. We can draw closer and closer to the Lord. And it's going to keep increasing. And as we draw closer, you know what happens? It starts rubbing off on others. Other folks see it. They experience it. And they can testify that, well, God did that for them, and so He can do it for me too. Yes, that's how God works. And you know, with Daniel and the three Hebrew children, don't you know, you fast forward and when they took the stand against bowing against the image that King Nebuchadnezzar erected, and they didn't bow. They stood the test. They were thrown into the furnace. And who came walking in there with them? There was a fourth man in the fire. God sent him because He's the God of gods and the Lord of kings. It didn't matter how hot they made that fire. And you know, it was so hot that it burned up the soldiers that threw him in there. That's pretty hot. But you know what? All it did is it loosed them from the prison. All right, just like Paul and Silas, it burned off their bands, their ropes, but it didn't singe a hair on them. Now, who could have done that? Nobody but the God of gods and the Lord of kings. Not only did He preserve their life, He preserved their hairs. Who cares? No, it was a testament. They didn't even smell like smoke. Now, we know what that... We go around a campfire, and you can tell people that have wood stoves in their houses or fireplaces. You can smell it on them. It's just on them. They came out of that fire without the smell of smoke. Now, how amazing is that? You know what that tells me? That's another testament in a spiritual sense of what God can do for us. He told His disciples, you're going to be in the world, but not of the world. In other words, you're going to pass through this world, but I don't want you to be contaminated. And there's power to keep you from being contaminated of all the sin and wickedness that's just saturated this whole earth, just like smoke. He's like, you walk through it and you know it's going to contaminate. He's like, no, I have the power to keep you from this world. That's the power of God of gods and the Lord of kings to keep us through this wicked world. No matter what they throw at us, what kind of smoke machines or what kind of whatever it is to try to contaminate us, God's saying, not going to happen. Their trust and confidence is in me and I'm going to keep them. And it's going to be, we can be a living testimony to what God can do in our hearts and lives on this earth. We can be a Daniel. And we can be a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. No, we may not have that high and lofty position, but you know what? We can get together and pray, just like they did. And we can serve God in our little places where we work and where we live and where we go to school and wherever it is. We can still live for God and allow God to work in and through us to be a testament of His power and of His kingdom that He set on this earth, and that we can take this thing all the way to glory with victory in our souls. You pray for me that I would do likewise.